Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kopi Talk, Singapore Literature Prize. So I'm Timothy. I'm from RE-NUS, and today I'll be the student moderator for today's session. So this panel session is really an attempt, or a rather belated attempt, to have a conversation on the Singapore Literature Prize, which was awarded late August this year. So now the theme for Singapore Literature Prize 2020 was Why We Write. And it's focused on examining what compels writers to write and why SLP is more relevant than ever before these challenging times. So taking heed from the vision of SLP 2020, we ask, what is the role? What is the relevance of Singapore Literature Prize? How is it crucial to the project of Why We Write? And today we're joined by an excellent group of panelists, all of whom are winners or co-winners of SLP. So just allow me to briefly introduce them. First up, we have Akshita. She is the author of Nimita's Place, 2018 Epigram Books, which co-won the 2020 Singapore Literature Prize for English Fiction. So it was adapted for stage in 2019 by Edith Podesta for T-Works and shortlisted for the 2019 Singapore Book Awards. Akshita is also the author of Beauty Queens of Bishan, 2019 Penguin Random House, SEA, and she has been a journalist and molecular biologist and is currently doing a master's degree at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy at NUS. Next up, we have Ng Yisheng. Yisheng is a Singaporean poet, playwright, fictionist, researcher, and LGBT plus activist. His books include the science fiction and fantasy collection, Lion City, Singapore Book Awards, which won the Singapore Book Awards Best Literary Work 2019, SingLit Prize 2020, the best as well as the best-selling non-fiction work SQ21, Singapore Queers in the 21st Century. He's also the author of the historical lecture performance compilation, Black Waters, Pink Sands, and the queer poetry collection's Last Boy, which won the Singapore Literature Prize 2008. As well as the anthology, Loud Poems for a Very Obliging Audience, and the Book of Hymns. He is currently working on the creative writing PhD at NTU and is editing a number of books, including the upcoming Exhale, an anthology of queer Singapore voices. Last but not least, we have Sitaraj. Sitaraj writes fiction in both English and Tamil. His first collection of short stories in the Tamil America, The Unchangeables, won the 2016 Singapore Literature Prize for Tamil Fiction, as well as the 2017 Karika Cholan Award for the Tamil Fiction. His first collection of Tamil poetry, Katradentai, won the 2016 Singapore Literature Merit Prize. Sorry for that. Yeah. So Sitaraj. So thank you all for joining today's session. So perhaps we would just like to start with a short introduction. So maybe we can start with Akshita. So perhaps congratulations on winning the award. So perhaps could you tell us more about the book which has won the award?
Well, thank you, Timothy. And it's really nice to be over here and really appreciate what RE-NUS does. My book is called Nimita's Place. I'm just holding it up here because it's a word that may not be familiar to many people. It's actually a name. And the book is about two women separated by 70 years of existence. Both of them have the same name, Nimita, but the meaning of their name has changed in 70 years. For one, Nimita is a fixed, unchanged destiny because hers is a historical narrative. For the other one, Nimita is like a pivot point. She comes to Singapore, becomes a molecular biologist, and tries to chart her own future. This is a book about food and friendship and what it means to find a place in the world to call home. What is home for us? And I'm just really excited to be over here with you guys, especially Yisheng and Sithu, because one of the first things that happened after the Singapore Literature Prize was that Yisheng and his mom called us, including Sithu, home to their place for a home-cooked meal. And to me, that is just the essence of what home is. It's people sitting together, having conversations over great food, warmed by love. So yeah, that's it for me.
Yes, thank you so much. Okay, next up, can we have Sithu? To share about more about the book, which won the SingLit Prize.
Well, yes, thanks. I had two books, which won prizes. The first was the poetry in Tamil, and that was It's Easy to Be an Italian. It's a collection of poems. I called it It's Easy to Be an Italian because it is indeed easy to be an Italian in an internet-dominated environment. You can be anything you want. You can put on whatever avatar and pretend to be whatever you want to be on the internet. And then I had a novel, The Wooden Elephant of Mariani, which won in the fiction, Tamil fiction. It's a merit prize this year. And it's a story about someone, about an Indian family that lives in Bukit Panjang all their lives. After the man's wife dies, he's told to go to India to do certain rituals to for her soul. And then he realizes he knows nothing about India, even though he's Indian, and actually his identity is all tied up with Bukit Panjang. So that's a dilemma. So those are the two books which won this year, and happy to share more later. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Sithu. Yeah. Okay, so last but not least, can we have Yisheng to share more about y'all?
Okay, so Lion City, okay, I've advertised it as fantasy, science, and fiction, but if the origins are more magical realism, I was really influenced by Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Jeanette Winterson and Angela Carter. So a lot of it is trying to take... to actually ask questions about Singapore, social political questions, and like try and portray it through the lens of fiction. Like the title story, Lion City, it starts out with a visit to, you know, a zookeeper brings her lover to the zoo, and he discovers that all the animals there are animatronic. I mean, and it's just like this going, yeah, Singapore's. Everything, all the wildlife died out a long time ago, so we've just had to replace everything with, you know, simulations, because that's what Singapore feels like sometimes. A lot of the stories are really inspired by my interest in history. Like there's a story that takes place over 1,000 years and in the form of a choose your own adventure story, in which a concubine from 14th century Singapore ends up choosing different paths and ending up not just in different moments of Singapore history, meeting Raffles and Lee Kuan Yew and Halimah Yacob, but also going to my friend's science fiction novels and meeting characters from them. And I realized it was actually, I was writing a lot of these while I was in the UK, and trying to explain, okay, what is Singapore to foreigners, and trying to do so in a way that wasn't obviously self-exoticizing. And I think what I was also trying to say is, like, Singapore is crazier and more special than we've advertised it to be.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you so much for all the very interesting introductions from all three panelists. So just a note to the audience who are watching today. So at the end of today's session, we'll be having a Q&A. So what you can do, if you have any questions along the way, is to really post it on the YouTube chat. So you will see the YouTube chat right at the right side of your, if you're using the desktop. So you can just leave your questions there. And along the way, we'll pick up the questions and then we'll post it to the panelists right at the end of today's session. All right, so now let's just move on to the content proper. So I'm in this panel session is really about the Singapore Literature Prize. So perhaps one way we could start maybe is to just get the panelists again to tell us what was your initial reaction when you learned that you have been shortlisted for the SingLit Prize. So maybe Akshita.
Yes, I believe I was at home, like most of us have been during this period, and I screamed and I called for my parents. And then my dad said, "What?" And then I said, "The Singapore Literature Prize." And he goes, "If you win, will you be rich?" And I said, "I will be rich in gratitude." So that was the immediate reaction.
Situ, how about you? What was your initial reaction when you learned that you have been shortlisted for the Sing Lit Prize?
I was quite happy, actually. I wasn't able to be too happy because I think I read the email somewhere at work or something like that. But I was quite grateful. I think I echo what Akshita says. So I think I was quite grateful to be even shortlisted. I think it was well worth all the pain in trying to write. And so that was what I felt in the beginning.
Yes, thanks for sharing. Okay, how about Yisheng?
Okay, the weird thing is I wasn't that surprised because I'm actually a bit surprised that Akshita says she's surprised because in 2019 we were both shortlisted for the Singapore Book Awards as well, you know. So we were already in the, you know, in an obvious list of literary books to look out for. I think one part of my blasé-ness was because I was in because I did win it back when I was in my 20s for poetry, and so it wasn't my first time at the rodeo. When I published it, I had thought like maybe I can win again. And then I saw the shortlist and I was like, oh shit, like there's a lot of really good books on this that I hadn't realized would be in the running, because previously it was only books that were published in Singapore which were considered. But this year, like Amanda Lee Koh's Delayed Rays of a Star, for instance, several books on in the fiction shortlist were published overseas, and I was like, I am up against a lot more competition than I thought. And then I was also so I was really surprised that I won in the end. There was it is actually a weird, I think it's a weird truth, and we'll get to this later. This idea, this realization that if you write a literary book, there's not a lot in Singapore. You're probably not going to sell that many copies, and so it ends up, you know, awards end up being, you know, one of your few forms of clear validation from it, mm-hmm. And so literally when the publishers were doing their thing, they were saying, yeah, we've got to send it in for the book awards, for the literature prize, because this is a way you can get validation and we can sell more this way. So yeah, I think it's a definite, if authors are not always conscious about it, a lot of publishers are.
Yes, thanks for that. So I think, what I've been hearing so far is really then there are competing thoughts and impressions then of the literature prize. So I mean, what I heard from Akshita, based on her conversations with her father and herself, there seems to be also an economic dimension to it. So people think that perhaps prizes, literary awards, are ways to get rich. So this is the public impression. Where else for the authors, I think just hearing from Yisheng and Sid, it's a way which these awards provide a sense of validation, a sense of reward for all the work that you've put in. But I thought also quite an interesting point that was raised by Yisheng is this sense of competition in awards, which also necessarily then implies that there's a matrix, there's a sort of means in which we can compare, say, the literariness of the work. So yeah, given this competing thoughts and perspectives on the Singapore Literature Prize, I just want to hear from the panelists themselves, perhaps they can articulate more sharply. So what are your thoughts on literary awards and prizes? Do you think they are beneficial to developing, say, writers in Singapore? Are they beneficial to promoting reading? Or even further, I think you can also consider the name Singapore Literature Prizes, sort of like a national emphasis on it, Singapore Lit Prize. So yeah, just what are some of your thoughts on literary awards and prizes or on the Singlet Prize. So Akshita?
Wow, I'm so glad my parents named me with an A because I keep getting to go first. Admit it, that is your metric. We were talking metrics, yeah? So there are two ways I'd like to look at the question. And one is that I, you know, wrote about books for the Straits Times for many years. And one of the features I did was on the value of the Singapore Literature Prize. And the metrics we used were whether it raises sales of the books and how writers feel about it within Singapore and how agents trying to sell Singaporean books overseas feel about the prize. So those were the three criteria that I used when I went and I interviewed people. This, I believe, was about 10 years ago. And in fact, after that feature, I'm not saying the feature contributed, I'm just saying that coincidentally, soon after, the prize was expanded to include works in multiple languages, and also more money was being dispersed. Because some of the findings were that, I think both my colleagues here will attest to it, you know, our main competition nowadays is not books. There is no competition except for a reader's time and attention. Books are not going to make you rich unless they're textbooks. I used to be a textbook publisher, so that's kind of how I know how much goes into textbook publishing. We also did a small poll for people who signed up for this, and we noticed that most people also looked at... Yisheng has given a correction saying that it wasn't multiple languages, it was multiple genres. However, Yisheng, the Singapore Literature Prize, was originally started as an English prize and only moved on to mother tongue languages later. So English has always been at the forefront of the literature prize history in Singapore. So that is something that people need to think more about and more work needs to be done. And the second is what the prize meant was that for a small cohort of people who were reading, writing, publishing fiction in and about Singapore, that prize drew attention to books published within Singapore. However, because the prize was not sustainable for many years, it would come in, the bookseller Dimmox would sponsor it, then after a while that would stop. Then the publisher SNP Panpack, which I worked with for a while, would come in and sponsor it, and then it would stop for a while. At one point in time, the prize was a prize for unpublished manuscripts. So, you know, much like the Epigram Books Fiction Prize today, unpublished manuscripts, which were sort of shortlisted for the SNP Panpack time, then they got published. So it was always about call and response, trying to elucidate interest from the reading community and publishers and writers trying to see how the prize could, you know, be used to generate more interest in what was happening. The thing, however, is that reading is not a competition. Books are not a competition. Netflix, which is basically, you could say, our competition for eyeballs, is just another way of looking at the world and telling stories. And when we talk about Singapore literature, I didn't set out to write a literary work. I wanted to write a book that cost $24, therefore was equal to the amount of money you'd spend on two tickets to the movies. So it had to deliver that much entertainment. I'm really happy it was shortlisted and co-won with Yisheng, because now people who haven't heard about the book will know about it. But I didn't actually set out to write a prize-winning book. I'm grateful for the attention. But the prize has always been... I won't say a contested space, but a constantly evolving beast. So what it is now is for, I think, readers to decide as much as writers. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Yes. Thanks so much for this. So maybe we'll just go on, move to the rest of our panelists first before we come back to you. Sid, so what are your thoughts on the Singlet Prize?
Well, I think a prize is exactly what you make out of it. There are good things and bad things. Let's say that if you look at the SLP, the good thing is that it gives you a focus on the sort of books that come out of Singapore. And I always find whatever prize it is, it sort of gives you a list that you ought to look at. And I've used the SLP list from before to read what's come out in Singapore in English, in Tamil. So I think it's very valuable to have prizes, Singapore Lit Prize, for example. So it shows you the diversity of writing that's going on here. If not, you tend to be lost, or you just tend to look at just a few writers. So lots of writers I've been introduced to because they won the Singlet Prize, they were shortlisted. But then again, you've got to also accept that there's an element of gaming people. So if you looked at the Singlet Prizes, then you you know, looked at people who won, and then you asked how many of them continued writing, or continue writing at a certain level, then, you know, I mean, Yisheng is an example. I mean, he won before, but he didn't just stay there. He went on and did more things. So you know, it really depends on the writer. If all you wanted to do was try and win the SLP because, you know, you can, for bragging rights or because you're proud of it, then that doesn't make sense. And there's a, you know, you could try one sort of thing. But I think the vibrancy of the scene is with people who are committed to writing. So a prize will not ensure that the writer has to do himself or herself. So these are my initial thoughts on something called a lit prize. Thanks.
Yes, thanks so much. Yisheng?
Yeah, the Singapore Literature Prize has been a really interesting phenomenon because, yeah, just like Sid, I've been able to use it as a reference point for like what are the big names in the other languages who are the unexpected names in English that I should look out for. And so it's a nice go-to place, but it's also followed some very interesting trajectories because, first of all, what was evident fairly early on was that with English, you would actually get all these bright young stars emerging, all these new writers. At one point, I was a bright young thing. Then you had people like Amanda Lee Koh. Now you've got Marilyn Tan. At one point, it was also, you know, people like Alvin Pang and Aaron Lee being shortlisted and Yong Shu Hong. But it's it has been sort of a really useful a tool for renewing the culture. And yet, what was happening with the mother tongue scenes was that for a very long time, it was very much the baby boomer generation establishment that was winning over and over again. And there's a lot of politics regarding this. It's partly because, you know, the non-English medium schools mostly got dissolved, and there's a lot of a sense of pride in the kind of literature being written in the 50s and 60s, and also the writing about the loss of that culture that remains very powerful. But it was when I won in 08, it was just really alarming to be on a panel with the other winners and to realize, you know, that, you know, it was five of us, and Latha won that year for Tamil, and we were the only people who could like remotely be called young because the others were like in their 60s over and like being terribly grumpy. Like you know, Muhammad Latif Muhammad won 3 years in a row, and he said he needed to put his sons through university, so he was going to keep on winning no matter what. It was it was just so institutional. And even in English, it was interesting to notice that despite all our progressivism, it wasn't until this year that a woman won for poetry. And this was despite women being prominent in English poetry for a while. And it was so, you did kind of wonder what kind of biases go into this system. And at the same time, I suppose I should talk to about this under progressivism. It's really interesting that the winners in a couple of years ago were actually controversial texts. We had Sunny Liu's Art of Charlie Chan Hok Chai. We had Jeremy Tiang's State of Emergency winning, where the Singapore Literature Prize amazingly actually was supporting works which would not be, say, PAP endorsed. So, I mean, that's a really special moment for validation. And yet, as someone who also believes in democracy, in valuing in popular culture as well as high culture, I go, well, what does it say that Chamonix Flint has been, who writes great detective novels, has been the judge several times but is never nominated? what does it say about the fact that no one would dream of giving the Singapore Literature Prize to Russell Lee for True Singapore Ghost Stories, which is Singapore's best-selling book? I mean, how much is this really a reflection of Singapore culture? A lot of thoughts, sorry.
Thanks for this. I think you do raise quite a lot of interesting points, and in fact all the panelists do. So I mean, even as we agree that perhaps the Lit Prize is only one way of looking at it, we still cannot deny that there are possibly stakes attached in the Lit Prize in the way that it shapes our culture, in the way that it shapes our impressions and perceptions, not just local, but as Akshita points out, also necessarily then overseas. So perhaps then the next question we can ask is, do you think that you then gain additional responsibilities after you have been shortlisted or conferred the Sing Lit Prize? So in both areas, for those who are shortlisted, and for yourselves, I mean, all of you here are winners or co-winners of the Sing Lit Prize. So do you gain additional responsibilities? Yeah. So Akshita.
Well, I can't change a book that's already been written. So that book stands as a work of fiction made at a certain point in time. And people sometimes tend to conflate what is written in a book with the opinions of the author. And that is not necessarily correct. In fact, I would say very often it's not correct. This is something that is, I think, particularly pointed nowadays, because everybody wants a personal connection. So they say, did this happen to you? I have a very good friend who I've worked with for many, many, many years. And when my book came out and he read it, it was like the only book he read the entire year, because he's very busy otherwise. And he introduced me the next time to some people as, oh, and this is my friend Nimita. And I'm like, you've known me for how long? No, I don't think that there is any more or less responsibility that comes with the distinction and, frankly, the honor of being shortlisted for a prize or winning it. I think that whenever you create something, you should think about how it will be received and be willing to deal with the reactions, the consequences, positive and negative.
So you're going to ask me. So I think that it's not because of the prize you have a responsibility. I think you have a responsibility when you write, and the responsibility is to be truthful to yourself. And, I think to me, it's to reflect the space you occupy, the historical moment where you're writing in Singapore, in this region, Southeast Asia, in this world, at this point in time. So I think the responsibility is there for anyone who writes. I can't imagine someone writing stuff that's not true or that does not reflect what's really going through, what your friends and you and everybody is going through in Singapore in the world at this point in time. So I think that's a responsibility. The prize sort of, ought to recognize writers to recognize the responsibility. It shouldn't be the other way around. I mean, I'm irresponsible, I win a prize, and then I get responsibility. So yeah, that's my thoughts on this question. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, actually, perhaps I can just invite you to clarify what you really mean by it's a responsibility then to be truthful. I mean, I guess I can see a way to be authentic and truthful in, say, art forms like poetry and nonfiction. But what about things like fiction? So how what does being truthful mean in writing things like fiction?
So the truth is, I'll just give examples. I mean, when you write in Tamil, and the way Tamil is spoken in Singapore has been undergone changes in the 70s, in the 80s, 90s, when you had people come in and start working here, and then because of cable, because of TV, you started listening to more stuff from India, and the language changed because people watching more and more media. then there's a way of writing Tamil which is grammatical, and there's a way of writing Tamil which, as it was spoken in the 70s and 80s, which had Malay words and Chinese words thrown in. So to be authentic is to record not just the issues, but the way people speak to each other. What does it mean when there's a word for market in Tamil, but people used to call it going to the pasar in Tamil? I'm sure it's in Chinese too. People said pasar. So I think there's that, you know, that ear and that heart for authenticity. Because 50 years down the road, if someone reads a book and it's not authentic, then what are you representing of your time and your historical place? So that's where you have a responsibility.
Right. Thank you so much for this. Okay, yes, last but not least, Yisheng.
Okay, actually, I want to follow up on that because it makes me think of like one of the works of Singapore literature that I love to hit on, which is Crazy Rich Asians. Well, I mean, because on the one hand, I have to acknowledge, like, look, it has put Singapore on the cultural map for basic Westerners and a lot of aspirational Asian Anglophones in a way that I think none of us other writers have managed. And yet it actually, that sense of responsibility, it's kind of maybe irresponsible to portray a Singapore in which everyone speaks perfect Tamil. Like, it's also irresponsible to portray a Singapore where all your characters are ridiculously rich and an issue, and you never mention that inequality is a problem, where all the characters are Chinese, and, you know, and it's where you have little footnotes to explain things about Singaporean and culture, and you get all the details completely wrong. I mean, I was like, and there's part of me that has to say, like, but no, he's not being faithful to Singapore. His allegiance is to Asian America at this point. So, but when I think about responsibility with the Singapore Literature Prize, what I think of more is platforms. Because I'm very aware of how I've been doing projects about the history of queer literature in Singapore. And so for the first time that Cyril Wong won a Singapore Literature Prize for Unmarked Treasure for an openly gay book, that was a big deal. I mean, not only his publisher didn't apply for an NAC grant for that, so Cyril didn't have to keep on changing his pronouns in the book for the Love Poems. And then after that, you know, because he there was no trouble, he could apply for grants, and all of us gay writers felt like, yeah, now we can apply for grants without changing our pronouns. And it was and of course, Cyril became more recognized as a spokesperson. I feel like that sense of having a platform comes to most writers even before they get if the prize goes. I don't think a prize in English has ever gone to a writer who didn't already have a sense of pride in the platform. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe in the nonfiction, I'm not so sure. But like, winning the prize gives you more credibility, and that's helped. I mean, for someone as punk as Marilyn, it's going to be interesting to see how she handles it.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So yeah. Thanks so much for that. Yeah. So I think it's quite interesting to hear diverse responses in terms of understanding this whole concept of responsibility. So I think
Timothy, may I just, it's more like a question directed to the Jacinto and Yisheng, because we were talking about responsibility and Jacinto talked about representing your times as they are. Yisheng talked about platforms for new narratives to evolve. And what I didn't say is that I actually feel that one of the fundamental roles of the writer, whether or not we acknowledge it, is to chart new stories, new things to which the humanity can aspire to. We have flip-top phones because some technology engineer watched Star Trek. So, you know, and especially in a time when everything seems so devastating and hopeless, maybe writers have a responsibility to chart us a way out of that hopelessness. And in your writing, Isheng and Sithu, have you tried to chart new narratives?
I would say I have. I mean, I was like literally worried that, I mean, when I was writing Lion City, it because I'm coming from poetry, so I was literally trying to say, like, with every story, I want it to be different, to never to tell the same story twice, to like not, you know, to have things, to write things that no one else seemed to be writing. I mean, one of the weird thing is a lot of the part of that was wanting to acknowledge the Malay history of Singapore and reflecting that in the legends and in the mythological references in the stories, and like which I go like that. There's a whole debate about appropriation that comes into that, but I think one reason I wanted to do that was because I felt this has not been done before. And actually, like returning to you, I was thinking it's very important for I think a number of people, including yourself, were noting the significance of an immigrant writer winning in the Singapore Literature Prize because there's all this damn xenophobia going around. And so to have an immigrant writer writing a novel about immigration and the trauma thereof, like winning the prize, it's like, yeah, I mean, I thought like that's a very good fuck you to all the, you know, all the nativists out there. Like, yeah, I mean, winning like a child out of Charlie Chan Hok Chai was, you know, making a political statement to people who are very supportive of, say, you know, one party status quo, but like xenophobia is another thing that we ought to like be combating. So, yeah. So, Sithuraj.
So I'll take from Isheng, Akshita, and really, I think the charting of a new course begins by framing the question. I think when you do frame the question, I agree absolutely with what Isheng is saying. Because, you know, there's lots of like, oh, you know, xenophobia and feeling that. But when someone who comes to Singapore and writes a story about Singapore, that sort of frames a question and forces us to think that all of us came to Singapore at some point in time, whether it's our parents, grandparents. You know, I think that's the power of it. When people start thinking for themselves and not just making blip remarks about things and just going on and just pigeonholing things, you know. So I think there are two parts to it. One is you could chart literally in your book and show that this is could be, but I think in my works I tend to want to frame the questions to hold up the situation and say, look, you know, I think we've got to think about this. And you know, if we are responsible enough to think about it, we should be safe enough to deal with it. So that's my view of things.
Yeah, I think that was a very nice discussion, talking about how is it our responsibility as writers to then constantly push at boundaries, to constantly write new stories. But I think Sithuraj points earlier saying that even as we try to push boundaries, even as we try to imagine and construct new realities, there's still a responsibility then to be as truthful as possible to what is necessarily currently happening. And I think just based on Isheng's answer, yeah, he also does kind of raise a lot of questions in me. So I think when you talk about things like Singapore Literature Prize, is the name Singapore then just bounded by, say, things like citizenship or perhaps immigrants, people who have been living here for many years and writing something about Singapore, should they still deserve to be convert things like the SLP. Yes,
is this the point where I point out that I'm a citizen?
No. I mean, it's just a debate that, possibly. Mm, yes,
there was actually a whole, minor sort of a discussion on about the question of Linda Collins' loss adjustment. It's a memoir about her by this New Zealander who's been living in Singapore for decades, and about the experience of her daughter committing suicide, and a lot of people have been talking about how important it's been, and it's kind of nuts that despite her being part of Singapore literary Singapore circles, it's not nominated for the Singapore Literature Prize because of certain certain papers. I mean, there are always going to be these strange gaps. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thanks for this. And I guess there's a lot of questions that perhaps we can probably take up in the in future sessions, future coffee talks like this. Because time is running short, I have to turn to some of the audience questions. So I think we have the first question from Su Qing. Su Qing asks, how do you think the prestige of SLP has evolved over the years? So this question is directed at anyone. So just anyone can answer this question. How do you think the prestige of SLP has evolved over the years?
Can I just say that back when when it was not divided by genre, one problem with the was that poets kept on winning, and most people, a lot of people, are just not going to want to buy a book of poetry. So, so I feel at that time there was this very sort of wayangness about the whole thing, you'll get a nice ceremony, but that doesn't necessarily mean that a lot of people are going to buy this. I mean, and when the one prize goes to a book that no one's going to buy, it doesn't. It's not a great look for the prize. So I think that, I actually do feel like after that there was more of a sense of momentum, of genuine interest in the prize. I mean, like when politically sensitive books are involved, then there is this, this natural sense of interest.
So I just want to say very quickly that, it's one thing to say that it's got prestige because other writers think it's great. And it's another thing to have prestige because more and more people are reading Singlet. And I would encourage the readers to read Singlet. I think that's what gives real prestige to the prize. I mean, if people start talking about the Singapore books that are being written and winning prizes, then that makes a lot of sense. It just makes sense for me to say that my fellow writers and my fellow writers to say that I'm good or it's great that you won the prize. So it really is back to the audience watching on YouTube. You've got to read Singlet. You've got to make it vibrant and real.
And if I could just add that in the publishing industry, in general, there is a bit of neo-colonialism. The Man Booker Prize winners and shortlisters still sell a lot more than winners of the Singapore Literature Prize. So I think the day when the Singapore Literature Prize will be seen as a tastemaker, even in Singapore, is hopefully not too distant, but it is still a little far away today.
Yes, okay. Thank you for that. So yeah, because we're short time, so perhaps we just do one more question from the audience. So it's quite a related question from Harris. So Harris asks, what do you think we can do then to increase the recognition of SLP and of Singlit among Singaporeans? So I think it's kind of related to your answer, Akshita. Yeah. So but all of you can answer it.
Mm. Right. So read and adapt the works. Make them your own. Writing is a conversation. Write your own books. Write your own plays in response, your own poetry. Make literature a part of your life. That's it.
Akshita, when you said that, I immediately went, does she mean write slash fiction and do fan art? And then I realized, yes, that would be awesome. I mean, because not only is would it be an incredible honor for many of us, who aren't earning that many royalties to begin with, to have people like you know, imagining our characters doing things, doing things with other characters in compromising ways. It would be very, it is the creation of more art. It is the creation of, and it allows the art of those of us who are a bit older to be reimagined in a new way by younger folks. So thus, it creates, a genealogy of ideas. I feel like part of this problem of always reading Booker Prize winners is that Singaporeans are not necessarily each other's primary cultural influences, and it would be nice to have that happening more.
I just want to very quickly say that, I don't want to talk about just writers. I want to talk about my friends who are artists, who are writing plays. I think I would say talk about it. Don't have to say nice things all the time, but talk about Singapore works of art. Okay, everyone has gone through and putting up. Lots of artists are having such a challenging time because of COVID-19. If you could just spend time talking about it and giving feedback and just multiplying the fact that these works exist by Singaporeans, then that makes a lot of difference to all these people who are creating because they believe so much in the act of creation. Thank you.
I Instagram all the books I read, and I actually have got a weird rota in my head where I decide, okay, half of them will be from Malaysia and Singapore. And it's actually, and it's quite interesting. I mean, I've actually got this whole idea, like, we also can't be parochial and nationalistic. I also try and read books from Southeast Asia a lot, not just from Singapore. But I do think, social media is an interesting tool, because it allows you to share your opinions. It's just very awkward when I find out I hate a book and I realize, oh, I'm senior enough now that it would be very cruel to actually tag the writer. Okay.
It's always cruel to tag the writer in a negative review, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have negative reviews. Just don't tag the writer, but talk about it. And yes, write slash fiction, write fan, make fan fiction. I love it. That's my dream, that people should write fan fiction about my characters. And then I will have an anonymous account on AOL3 and go and read it.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks so much for all the answers. So yeah, actually, for Kopi Talks, we usually have it around 45 minutes. So it's thank you all for actually coming online to watch these sessions. But I think we do not want to end this session prematurely. So just pose one final question to all our panelists. So since we're talking a lot about responsibilities and what a writer should do, what a writer can do, maybe just a final question is, what then are your future plans as a writer? Maybe if you're not going to write that, just what are your future plans? But hopefully that's not the case. But So what are your future plans? And just perhaps maybe if you want to share some of your works that you have done in the past, feel free to share it right now. So yeah, we'll just go in the same alphabetical order. So Akshita, please. Yeah.
I'm working on a digital interactive story for children that will hopefully be launched for Arts in Your Neighborhood. I'm excited because one of the things I do is I work as a reading coach for children. And if kids don't read, adults won't read. So I'm also working on another novel. But I think also in my plans, because when you're writing, you don't really have much time to read beyond your particular sphere of interest and research. I'm really looking forward to reading more books, including all the stuff that's coming out in Singapore nowadays.
I just want to quickly say that this digital thing is important because I think patterns of reading and writing are changing. And I'm really thinking about what that means as I write and whether words on a page are really going to be the future of writing. So I don't have an answer, sorry, but yeah, it's preoccupying my time.
Actually, linked to that, I do believe in the power of performance and including recorded performance. I mean, the whole notion of podcasts and vodcasts, such as this, which allow us to explore ideas in new ways. I've been doing a lot of lecture performances. I mean, we were talking about Black Waters, Pink Sands, which is, and I've got some ideas for future doing like tours of museums with queer and feminist focuses. But what I'm supposed to be doing for my PhD and what I'm doing very, very slowly is a novel about pre-colonial Singapore, about 14th century Singapore. And I'm having a lot of fun doing it, but it's just going so damn slow.
Yes, okay. Thanks a lot for your answers. So yes, to our audience, really, thanks for joining us. I think we're very grateful to have Akshita, Sid, and Yisheng here today. We're very grateful to have really quite a diverse panel, while also themselves SLP winners and co-winners. So yes, thank you, and please do join us for our future Kopi Talk sessions. Stay tuned to our Facebook page. That's where we post our updates. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Timothy.